Good morning. It is Tuesday. The Saints lost last night. I know a lot of you probably are happy to hear that. This is the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are live here in the Kia Studios. Mike, Bo, and Tiff hanging out here with you. And we'll get to Monday Night Football. But anything interesting happened to you, father-to-be, last night?
No, I did the dishes.
Good. Get ready to do a lot of them.
Yeah, right? No, I get it. I did. I was telling Mike, my neighbor, and I'll shorten the story. My neighbor had a really cool coffee table across the street, and it was one of those ones that it spans out, and you can put stuff inside of it. And I was like, man, I love this coffee table. I want it one day. And then I get a call about a year ago, and he's like, hey, can you help come move some furniture? His girl had bought all new living room furniture, and she's like, the coffee table's got to go. And I told him, I was like, I want that coffee table for my basement. I was like, for the man room. I want it. That's perfect.
The man room.
And he's like, I'm not giving the coffee table up. Refused to give the coffee table. I was like, I'll buy it from you right now. He's like, nope. He's like, this coffee table is not going anywhere. It sat in his basement for the last year because she made him move it. He texted me. He's like, come get this coffee table. It's
yours. He finally just gave it to you. You think it's because you have a baby on the way? You think it's a gift?
No, but I mean, it's nice. I mean, I think maybe that's what he wanted, but I think it was more like, and I was telling him, I was like, dude, this is so great. Like, now I can put my iRacing keyboard and everything inside the coffee table, so it's like disguised.
Dude held on to it for
a year. I respect
just because
that.
Because he didn't want to part ways with it.
Yeah, and I respect that because I did the same thing.
But there was no use for it.
There was
for him.
It was more of if Mike, you feel this way, or you've had as a guy, when you do you have a piece of furniture that is cool that you feel like suits you, it's hard to get rid of it when the female in your life forces you to.
I would say, yeah, the stuff from my single days, definitely I held on to a little too long. Yeah, I purged recently. I just started getting rid of stuff, but you know, there was like a sectional that, you know, I had in my house for a while that I bought off like eBay that I was like, yo, it's go time. And I kept it in storage in my basement for like years. And I was like, why do I have this? I don't even know. So we got rid of it like a couple months ago. But yeah, man, there's a certain level of things like that when it comes to furniture, I think, for sure. And then you look at yourself and go, this is useless. Why? I mean, it's literally falling apart. Why am I even messing with this right now? So, yeah.
I never held on to any. I moved so much, like working your way up through TV and stuff, that every place I left, I just said, hey, you guys want this? I'm packing up and driving to Texas or Oklahoma. You can have it.
There was a time in my life where I moved like every single year, and then also I had my stuff in four different places. Like I had a condo in Tuscaloosa for a little bit. I was living in Birmingham, had some stuff back at my parents' house, had a storage unit up in Buford near where I used to live. I had stuff all over the Southeast. And then when I finally combined it all, I was like, man, I got like four houses worth. Like, what am I even doing right here?
The coffee table I'm replacing, I've had it for 15 years.
But you use it.
Yeah.
Like it's in the, yeah.
Yeah. I've had it. And if the, you know, Amy said multiple times, just get rid of it. And I'm like, no, it's serving its purpose. And it was a hand-me-down. I don't give up stuff.
I don't hang out to furniture. They don't make furniture like they used to.
I just don't like buying new stuff, to be honest with you.
That's fair. That's fair.
And you got to assemble everything you get now because it's all made in that IKEA form. So you got to, you know, put it all together. And
you don't have to buy it from IKEA.
You could go on like...
Pretty much, but anything you go online with...
Store.
But yeah, I guess so. But then it's more expensive.
Go on Etsy.
That's why you just don't give up stuff. You just keep what you got.
Just hold on to everything, everyone. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan. Injured, hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm.
What about you, real quick? Anything?
Yeah, I had to think about that. I was caught off guard.
Wow.
I was like, going to the Saints. I tried to cook yesterday and failed miserably. And then got a call that someone I knew was in town. And luckily, I went and had lunch, and I didn't have to pay for it. So that was pretty cool. So it saved me from the disaster in the kitchen of what I butchered after I went to the grocery store.
Jeez.
Can we ask what you were attempting to cook?
No, because it's very simple, and it's going to make me, I already look bad in the kitchen. And this will probably make it look 10,000 times worse.
It's so. Okay, Tiffany. Lots of people screw up macaroni and cheese. I mean, they're normally 12, but it's
did
okay.
Did you slice the hot dog a long ways before you put
it
in the microwave?
Oh, you guys are funny.
I thought you could just poke the fork holes in it. It worked just as well.
Yeah, maybe so. Hard, hard. No, I tried to cook a piece of meat a different way that I hadn't really tried it before, and it just did not turn out well. It just, it was a colossal fail. And it was, I was mad because I'd just gone to the store, bought some things to get me through these few days that I'm home, and thought I could try something simple. Only three ingredients. There's no way to mess it up. And I found a way.
Okay, this is my last question, then we can move on, I promise.
Okay.
Was what you made not edible after you cooked it, or you just didn't want to eat it?
I made two pieces of it. The second piece is still up.
For debate.
First piece was a little sketchy.
Okay.
A little sketchy. So thank goodness I got treated to lunch yesterday. All right. Back to non-cooking stuff. Monday Night Football. Saints fall to the Chiefs 26-13. And so if you look at just the record, when I'm just looking at the NFC South standings, you got your Falcons in first at 3-2. Buccaneers tied with them at 3-2. Saints 2-3, and the Panthers 1-4. Of course, Falcons just beat the Buccaneers, though.
Yeah, and essentially it's a game and a half because you own a tiebreaker. So not only do you have a full game on them record-wise, but you own the tiebreaker at the moment until November. So that is obviously key. And then with Tampa, you own the tiebreaker. I looked at it. This morning, I was looking at the standings. The Falcons have a 625 strength of schedule. That's the winning percentage of the teams they've played. The only one that's better than that is the Giants at 640. Thank you, Kansas City, though, because you did us a favor, and New Orleans did Mike and I a big favor, too, because they decided not to cover Travis Kelce. And the Chiefs were able to get a big enough lead that they allowed Rashid Shaheed to score a touchdown, which also helped us.
Yeah, they made
it was
the
a great
play.
Night for us.
Kelce had a game high 9 catches for 70 yards, so that's probably, I think it was the best game of the season.
Far and away.
Been all the talk about him struggling this year so far, and here he just put up his best numbers. Kareem Hunt, by the way, ran 27 times for 102 yards. And a touchdown.
Tiff, I've never been more confident in the fact that I don't think Travis Kelce was in shape coming into the year. You look at how he's kind of slowly built up, and to me, I don't know what he had last week, like 5 catches, something like that. But he started off, and there were weeks where he just went away, and that includes when he played here against the Atlanta Falcons. Seems like he's working himself back into shape, and the good news is for the Chiefs is no matter what injury you get or who goes down or what else happens, it seems like you're able to piece it together because you have a Hall of Fame head coach and a Hall of Fame quarterback and a Hall of Fame tight end. So when you have all those things and you kind of put them all together, you can have runaway wins like this. I thought that I just didn't feel like at any point last night the Chiefs were in danger. And I know Derek Carr comes out of the game and he says, all the way up until the injury, I thought we were going to win the game. It's like, I don't know what you were watching, man, and I know that you're in the moment and all that stuff, but I never felt like at any point watching this game that the Chiefs were in danger of losing. They were just in command at all times. I know Alvin Kamara did some good things early, and obviously, there were certain situations where it felt like you might have had the Chiefs, but you look at the ingenuity that Andy Reid uses offensively and the pieces he's able to work with, it doesn't feel like they can be stopped.
I think they can. I mean, we almost beat them, and we slowed them down and didn't. But they did. They looked like they felt in control that game the entire night. Chris Jones didn't even have his speaking of Hall of Famers, possible Hall of Fame defensive tackle, didn't have his best night. But as soon as his name got mentioned for not doing anything, he showed up. Troy Aikman goes, haven't talked about Chris Jones a lot tonight. Hey, Chris Jones is in the backfield blowing the play up. And then they just started laughing. It was just typical of what that team is. They're really good on both sides of the ball. They're not like elite. I don't feel like they're elite guys on anything, but they're just so freaking good, and they have X factors at multiple positions.
On the heels of Thursday Night Football, the Falcons had some extra time to get set for their next NFC South opponent, which happens to be the Panthers. What did they do with all of that time to prepare. We'll discuss next here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are back and getting you set for the Falcons as they take on the Panthers this week. A lot of good things happening from their victory in overtime against the Buccaneers last week on Thursday Night Football, including Kirk Cousins spreading the ball around. He found seven different receivers, getting Kyle Pitts involved in his best game of the season. Of course, Drake London, 12 receptions, 154 yards, so a massive game for him, including a touchdown. Coach Raheem Morris, he talked with Dave Archer on the coach's show about how Cousins has put the onus on himself when it comes to building chemistry with his guys.
I think that's just the leadership that Kirk shows. I think it's on all of us, but particularly when the leader is able to put that on his shoulders and able to shoulder those things and be able to go through that process with the wideouts, I think it puts us all in that bucket of just getting better. And that's exactly what they did, and that's exactly what they showed. And it's fun to watch in practice, but it's a lot of fun for you guys to see it in the games. And like, I want to keep giving you that, and I want us to keep giving you that because those guys are capable of doing it.
You know, I think the best thing that he says there kind of throws them all in a bucket, right? And I just look at this situation. I think it's probably why I'm a little bit slower than some to kind of jump off bandwagons, because you learn, like, as you go in these situations, right? And it's funny because, you know, if things were obviously very, very ugly in week one, and I was very disappointed at the game plan. I was very disappointed with how we utilized the players. I have been disappointed multiple times since. You know, obviously, even in the win with the Saints, I was disappointed in what the offense looked like. And there's always in the back of my head, when you have a guy like Kirk, you have a smart guy like Zach Robinson upstairs, and you're looking at film, and you're looking at the little nuances, and you know you have athletic guys who can go up and catch a ball, right? It might be, hey, a half step early, or hey, recognize that, you know, he's kind of guarding you on the inside. Maybe we need to cut across his face. Maybe you need to get around the outside of him. So there's all these little nuances that I think that, you know, the Kirk Cousins obviously has seen a lot of football, as has Zach Robinson, as has Raheem Morris. And you just trust these guys, don't you? You trust them to be able to kind of correct that and get it right to the point where all of a sudden, suddenly you wind up with a 500-yard passing game. So I think it's worth kind of mentioning that as Kirk Cousins continues to dive into film and this offense continues to evolve, it's not stagnant. It's not just a playbook that you installed. Like, all of these things will involve, evolve. You'll eventually get plays off of plays off of plays and be able to kind of move forward that way. So I think that's exciting what Raheem Morris is saying.
Yeah, what you were just talking about, that growth over time is key, and you're spot on with it because Coach Raheem Morris, he agreed. Here's more from him.
Yeah, we've kind of talked about this, and it's a learning curve. It's a learning process. And to watch those guys get better and better every single week, who knew they would take the kind of jump they took this week? But I'm glad they did, and it was needed at the right time. Those guys went out there and executed at a high level, whether you're talking about Kurt to Mooney or Kurt to Drake or Kurt to Kyle or whatever, Kurt to Cordero. I mean, whatever the case was, man, you got a chance to watch those guys really go out there and execute. And all of those things take time. All of those things take trust, you know, decision making. And Kurt was as decisive as I've seen him since he's been here.
Yeah, I think it was just more of Kirk having a feel for exactly how they're running their routes and where they're going to be. I could already tell that he had a trust in Darnell Mooney and Drake London because he was putting those guys up to bat in critical situations. How many times did he put Darnell Mooney up in that game-winning drive against Philadelphia? How many times, who did he go to against the Saints to draw the defensive pass interference? It was Darnell Mooney. And he's used Drake London in a way. I mean, I don't know if, you know, what you want to guys think, if I'm right or wrong, or if you agree or not. And I don't care. I know what I've seen. Drake London has been used as Kirk Cousins' tight end in this offense until last week. Anytime he needed to go, there was a contested catch that he needed to get yardage, whether it was a first down or just get you into a down and distance that you could convert, he went to Drake London. Whether he was covered or not, he was forcing balls in there and said, I'm going to put you up to bat. Yep. And Drake London, all he does is catch the football. Yep. That's who he is. We said it in training camp. Mike, you said it. I didn't, but you said it to him. I think you're one of the best 50-50 ball guys, if not the best, in the league. And Drake London has played that way.
He said, I appreciate that a lot, man. Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And I mean it, Drake. I mean it.
One of the differences in Thursday night's game was the tight end. Yeah, and he was creating separation because he was running fast, aggressive, decisive routes. And what that did was that created separation. It didn't It didn't freaking matter who was covering him, despite what some of the fan base thinks.
Yeah, and I want to hit on that one thing, too, because I think so many times I make this mistake, too. We're like, you know, Kirk, obviously, is going to be able to kind of pull the strings on that. Let's give Drake London and Darnell Mooney some of the other receivers credit, too. Maybe they're going back to Kirk and saying, hey, this is a back shoulder throw. You know, we weren't able to get over the top of him. He's outrunning me. He's bailing early. Let's back shoulder this thing and run one of the comebacks along the sideline. I think that's probably happening as well.
Kyle Pitts, as I mentioned before, coming off his best game of the season, 7 receptions for 88 yards. Here's Coach Morris again on the Coach's Show with Dave Archer on getting Kyle Pitts the ball early last week.
It was awesome. You know, Kirk goes out early and he fires a dart to Kyle. He does nothing but finish it, catch the ball. And then later on throughout the game, you got a chance to see him get the ball in his hands, run with it a little bit. And that's the Kyle Pitts that we expect. That's the Kyle Pitts that's even got more. And I can't wait to watch him. I can't wait to watch and see where he progresses from here.
I think that the progression of Kyle Pitts is going to be one of the talking points for the next 2 months, right? I mean, it's like the guy kind of rose from the ashes last week when you don't expect anything, and everybody in the world is asking questions, including me and you, because there's no doubt about it, and we can go out there and say it again. I've had issues with the effort, the toughness, and everything that goes along with playing the tight end position, and yet it seemed like, you know, schematically things just lined up with the way the Bucs tried to defend him last week.
Well, I don't even know if it's schematically – you've been in these situations. Maybe Kirk Cousins and him had a talk. You know, there was all this conversation in the offseason, or I say in the training camp period of the offseason, where Kirk was pushing Kyle Pitts, and it was public knowledge that he would get on him after a bad route or build him up after a good route, right? And he was trying to use that to motivate him. I think the ball came early his way because he got open. I don't care if Kyle Pitts has 3 catches for 40 yards or 7 for 88, is what I think you said. What I care about is when they come and how he's getting the ball. To me, the tight end, I don't need – there's enough guys on this roster that can make a difference as far as being a weapon. If one steps up each day, you're not going to have 500 yards every week, right? Not everybody's going to have the verge of 100-yard receiving yard a day. But it's who steps up in crucial moments, and if someone steps up each game and puts you in the situation to win. I felt that on Thursday night you needed multiple guys to step up in the passing game because your running game wasn't up to par as
no,
it's
it wasn't.
Been.
Vita Vea, beast.
So you they stepped up there, and Kirk stepped up. The fact of the matter is if with Kirk filling the flow of the offense and being decisive of where people are going to eat, and when you don't run the ball well, you can have that counter. So that, to me, is a huge moment in the offense, and I think Kirk's comfortability pushes that forward, and basically it felt like the offense has been unlocked.
Yeah, and I think the way that Kyle Pitts is kind of utilizing the yak, I think he and I've been on it, you know, on his head a little bit about the way he blocks in the run game, the toughness or lack thereof. But I'll tell you this much, man: when he's gotten his hands on the ball and he's getting north and south, it's pretty fun to watch. Like he's taking 3 and 4 down with him. So I have definitely been a fan of the way he's at least run with the ball in his hands. I think that's something to kind of build off of.
And the difference too, if you look at the sample size of games that they've had so far, he's been targeted. That was the most he's been targeted in a game. It was 8 times. Before that, I think the max was like 5. So they went to him.
Yeah, and I think, honestly, that's all about the first couple of routes that he ran and getting open and making the catches. Because I can tell you, I've talked to a couple of quarterbacks that played in the NFL, and they've all said, if I come to you, and you can hear it. You can hear it, them talk about it. You can hear the conversation. Who was it? There was an NFL quarterback early this year that said, "I've come to you. You don't make the catch." I'm not. It was
Brady talking.
It was Brady
about,
talking about
yeah,
it. Thank
rookie,
you.
I think it was a rookie receiver.
It was.
Yeah.
If you go to a guy and they drop a ball or they don't protect the ball with the route they run and they don't run that route aggressive to protect the ball and you can get undercut, they're not going to come back to you. They lose trust in you that game. You get off their radar because they're not good. They don't want to put the ball in harm's way a lot of times. So when you lose trust early, like I think he did in the Saints game, I think Kirk lost trust in him that game because of poor route running, not catching the ball when you had a chance to secure the ball. The catch, They're not going to trust you. They're going to go away from you. That's the fact. That's a matter of the fact of what they are, the way it goes. So when you earn that trust early in the game, it's just like speeding their clock up, right? If you get pass rush early in a guy, you speed a quarterback's clock up, it's always sped up the rest of that game. Same thing with trust in a receiver.
Yeah, you just got to build it up. It's already that time of year where basketball and football season are colliding. The Hawks got some preseason action on the way, and MLB, the playoffs are heating up. We'll be right back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. This hour brought to you by Morgan & Morgan Injured. Hire Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm. Well, the Hawks are in action, preseason action, that is, tonight against the Indiana Pacers at home at State Farm Arena. By the way, you can hear the game right here on our flagship station for the Atlanta Hawks, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, with pregame starting at 7 o'clock and then tip off shortly after 7:30. So they will be back. It's already that time of year.
I have an announcement to make. I am officially ready to be hurt again by the Atlanta Hawks. I'm ready to be hurt, man. I'm open for it. Another year where it's supposed to be addition by subtraction, and I don't know what that means, but DeJounte Murray is not here. So you bring in Zachary Risacher, Dyson Daniels, whoever else we're going to try to add in that column, man. I don't know. Let's roll the ball out there and see what happens is what that's what Quinn Snyder seems to be thinking at this point. So it's going to be an interesting start to the year because I have no idea what this team is going to look like and what the changes are going to look like.
I'm optimistic. Maybe. I saw some stuff.
Where's the clap track?
I saw some stuff from Media Days.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed with Trey's demeanor, his attitude, kind of how he was carrying himself. I like the beard. He's got a beard. I like the beard. The beard makes
so that changes his game.
Yeah, honestly,
it's an attitude thing.
It felt like
I feel different with a beard too.
When I looked at Trey and I looked at some of the stuff he was doing and heard some of what he was saying, I felt confidence and like he's like, yeah, I'm here. I'm grown up. I got a beard. I'm ready to be a leader.
I got a beard.
Well, yeah. That's what I heard. I don't know if he said those words.
He said something like, I'm going to play like a grown man because I look like a grown man.
Honestly,
and I was like, all right,
I believe you. I don't know what he said. What I heard by watching and hearing was, look, I'm a dad. I'm grown up now. I've got a beard. I'm a man. And I'm ready to show that I'm the leader that this team needs. And yeah. I like the fact that him and Risacher have been out publicly doing stuff like they were at the Falcons game a few weeks ago. I think it might have been the Sunday night
game.
That
stuff matters.
I think so too. And also, real quick,
ding.
Doesn't have what's our big guy that we traded a couple 2 years ago?
John Collins.
Yeah. He doesn't have DeJounte. It's his team officially. It's the first time in his career I think he can walk in the locker room and say, this is my team, and there's no one that either supersedes me that as far as was here before me or whatever. So I'm optimistic. I'm going to re-engage and give this a chance.
I'm ready. I'm ready. Let's go.
I'm sure they'll crush my heart.
You might get a glimpse of what's to come at preseason, but I guess keep in mind, based on how Quinn Snyder sounded during his media availability, they might be just a little, more cautious, I guess, about the minutes guys are getting. So he said, I think, looking at all the games over the course of the preseason, we have some guys that had longer summers that we want to be conscious of their minutes. So they'll probably be rotating, guys in now. It's preseason. It's kind of what you expect anyway.
I'll be curious to see what exactly that means because I know that's kind of leaning towards Risacher, who played in the summer league and was out in Vegas for a while and got some minutes there. And also Bogey. Dylan makes a good point in my ear. Bogey playing in the Olympics and doing different things.
That wasn't about Trey because he did not play in the Olympics.
No,
or the summer league.
No, it wasn't. Unfortunately, but I think it's interesting because obviously Risacher needs minutes, right? He needs reps. He needs to obviously develop and you think the world of him. But he's a guy that needs to play if he's going to have any impact on the team this year. So I'll be curious to see what the balance is. But I'm with you, man. I'm ready to be hurt again. Like, I'm on board. I'm ready to be hurt again. Just break me down slowly, man, if you're the Hawks.
MLB playoffs in full go. And after the Detroit Tigers beat the Cleveland Guardians last night in Cleveland 3-0, And after the Kansas City Royals beat the New York Yankees in New York 4-2 last night, both ALDS and NLDS series are now tied at 1 apiece. So game threes between the Phillies and Mets and Dodgers and Padres, that is going down tonight.
Yeah,
people happy in Kansas City, by the way.
I'm happy. I'm happy in Kansas City because I'm obviously not a Yankees fan. Don't like them. Don't care for them. Nope.
No.
I wanted the Kansas. I want Kansas City to win it. They had one big inning and were able to hold them off. But the Detroit game was the one that had a little bit of drama. They're in the top of the ninth, and it was crazy because I told you I took sprinkles on a walk. I'd cut the grass, did the dishes. I told you I bragged about, got the new table. And I finally get a chance to sit in. I turn it on the baseball game. And it's in the top of the ninth. There's two on, one out. And old Kerry Carpenter went yickety.
Tater.
I mean, right Tater. Over that right field wall. And Detroit, Cleveland, or Kansas City, I'm pulling for all y'all.
Dude, I was literally about to ask you. There's eight teams left. Like, if you had to pull for one of them to win the World Series, which one of those eight teams are you going with?
Because
I've got two, but
Kansas City's had titles recently in baseball and obviously
like
football.
Years.
Yeah, but they got the football,
that's
so
yeah, that's
bleep
point.
Them.
That counts. Okay.
Detroit ain't had nothing in quite
a
while.
They were watching the game in the stadium last night. Tiff,
people
they were cheering.
Had their Kansas City Royals hats on and Chiefs jerseys on at the same time.
Yeah.
When was the last time Detroit won anything?
Well, the Tigers won a World Series, didn't they? Like 15 years ago?
No, they went.
I'm wrong
and
about
they did
that.
Not
they
win.
Went.
They still haven't.
I don't know, but I was going to say that you're right on board with me. The Tigers and the Royals are both kind of at the top of my list where I'm like, dude, get it done. You know what I mean? Just a blue-collar brand of baseball, it feels like, and just kind of chugging along. I don't want to see any of the big payrolls win, and I know that that's messed up. I don't care. I don't like the fact that there's a luxury tax in baseball. I don't want to see the Yankees, the Dodgers, whoever else it is that pay out the, you know, out the butt that no other teams can utilize.
You're right about the Tigers, by the way.
Yeah.
It's been since, what, the last one was 1984?
Yeah. I think they're, now they had a, they had
a good stretch for
they
a
had
bit.
An NBA, they've had four NBA titles since then, or three at least. I think four. I think they won two with the Rip Hamilton teams and Ben Wallace.
Oh, yeah, they won two. They have four, yes.
Cleveland won a title recently. Unfortunately, to disagree with you, Mike, you know, maybe San Diego, only because they lost their football team and they ain't won a title in all, and I don't, ever. A San Padres ever won a title? I don't think so.
Let me Google.
Technically by title drought, but there's something to your point. There's something about the smaller market teams. And I know Detroit is not necessarily considered a small market, but they operate seemingly like one. So I think the Tigers.
This just in from Dylan. The Padres are the oldest franchise, right? That has never won a World Series. So
if you're going title droughts, them, if you're going market size and what they can spend, you know, one of those three teams between the Royals, Tigers, and Cleveland.
Let's hit a TB's timeout. We'll keep this quick, but I saw a headline on ESPN that is talking about the Chiefs, and it says the band is back together for the Chiefs. Because as you mentioned, and as we talked about earlier, a lot of their key players have been, former key players have been brought back. So then I started thinking about, all right, which band, sports band, would I like to see back together? Mm. I was thinking about my time back in Oklahoma City getting to cover the Thunder on their run to the finals, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden. That was kind of their big three there. Nick Collison on that squad, and I forget who I am missing. Tabo Sefolosha. There's a lot of guys that I can, you know. Kendra Perkins, thank you. Yes, and Perk. That was a blast getting to cover that team and follow them on their first run to the NBA Finals, which happened to be against LeBron James and the Miami Heat.
Yeah.
So it would have been cool to see what could have been if those three would have kept playing together.
Would it be wrong if I said I want the 06 and 08 Florida Gators of Tebow and Percy Harfin.
Yeah.
They
were all on the 09 team, too,
honestly,
by the way. Ding.
Honestly, I wouldn't mind the receiving core of Julio.
Dude, that's the way I was
Roddy,
going.
Harry, Tony G. There was another tight end there. I can't remember. He caught a touchdown pass in the Saints game in 2012, yeah, but I'm not a big fan.
I wish I was listed as a tight end.
So you're not a big
fan. I wish I was listed as a tight end. I will say this, though, as a bonus. Look, I grew up a Cubs fan. The Kyle Schwarber, Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant Cubs just kind of fell apart after the World Series. Like, that was a fun team. Javi Baez, Addison Russell. Those were fun teams to watch that just never really materialized much, honestly, much like the Thunder and that run that they, you know, could have possibly had. So, yeah, that's for me. Yeah,
also would have been cool to see, if I'm thinking about teams that I got to cover on their runs to the Super Bowl that did not win, the Panthers and Falcons. So it was 2015 and 2016.
Yeah.
Would have been cool to see what was Alex Mack and, you know, Matt Ryan, like all those guys. And that Panthers locker room was pretty awesome. Keekly, Thomas Davis, Cam, all those dudes too. So
yeah, I like that Panthers team a lot less than you did, but there was reason for that.
I gave love to both.
But I'm going to say, no, I know, I'm just kidding. But I'll tell you something, Luke Keekly, man, geez. That defense was so good that year. I think there was like 20-something times that the Panthers got the ball in plus territory based off a turnover. It was a huge number.
He's calling some games for us on CBS Sports Network, so getting in the rotation. So we'll see how that goes for him. Obviously, he'll probably kill it. All right, when we come back here on the morning shift, we will get you set for the Panthers and Falcons after what? Thursday Night Football, they had 10 days? Is that what that amounts to?
Yeah, it could be good news for us on the injury front because of that layoff.
Bing or ding, whatever. We'll be right back here on the morning shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're in our 7 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Zero Res, smart, lasting, clean.
Just expecting somebody to grunt into the microphone at any moment listening to this music. You know what I mean? It's like the opening scene from Ace Ventura when they're grunting.
You mean like that song
of Stir? Did you just do that too?
And the Ace Ventura is like, bro.
No, that was the worst. Like, I'm not even gonna imitate it, but
I'm better at the Rick Ross grunt. Oh,
Day Day, get him. Please get him.
I reel these man in. Golly.
Dylan, you sound like you're an extra in the dog pound in Cleveland, and you're like, but trying to do like some kind of bark.
Like DMX.
It sounded like, I'm done with you today. I'm just going to do a hard pivot here. Let's talk about what Raheem Morris liked in that Thursday night victory against the Bucks. Actually, better yet, we'll take a listen to it because he joined Dave Archer on the coach's show.
The things that really stuck out for us was the time of possession, giving us a chance to have the ball longer on offense. Because we were able to convert more third downs, the third down percentage was absolutely better. And when those things happen, you accumulate more plays on offense, and that allows you to spread the ball around like you want to. Getting the ball to Mooney, getting the ball to Drake, getting the ball to Kyle, getting the ball to Ray Ray, having the ability to get the ball to Bijan to pass or to run, the same with Tyler. And you want to be able to get those things more, but every game kind of plays out differently. This game played out in the pass and basically daring us to pass, and those guys going out there and executing was awesome.
Yeah, like I mentioned throughout the show, that was seven different pass catchers that Kirk Cousins was able to connect with in their win.
Yeah, you know what's Raheem? He starts talking so fast sometimes that he says stuff like, and I catch it, and he goes, "You know, our third down percentage was absolutely better." And I'm like, "Yeah, it was. I mean, it wasn't like crazy. It's not like we took the top off on third. It was great. It was good. It was improved." But there were definitely some missed opportunities for me on third down. But he mentioned it. You get the ball to, Bijan a few times in the passing game. And obviously, you know, you get that 2-to-1 ratio that we talk about with Bijan and Tyler Allgeier in the backfield. Obviously, it didn't call for that. And it's hard to second guess what the run game is when the passing game's so good. But eventually, you'd like to kind of see both of them come around. But he mentioned there were a number of situational things that Atlanta was absolutely better at. And time possession is one of those things that you and I both, Bo, have pointed out till we're blue in the face, that you have to have time of possession and convert on third down and stay on the field, and the defensive numbers will continue to kind of look up if you're able to do that. And so I think it's awesome. He kind of highlights that and all those things that all-encompassing with Bijan's touches and third downs and, you know, everything else.
Well, 2 weeks ago, going into the Saints game, you were converting 22% of your third downs. You converted 43% essentially last week against Tampa Bay. So, yeah, honestly, I don't mean to sound like argumentative, but he's right. It was that's a 20% percentage jump.
Well,
now,
after the Saints, I think it was 27% is what you're averaging on the year.
26, yeah, which was 29th in the league. So now you're that much better than that. And I know that Tampa Bay coming into the game last week, they were converting 42% of their third downs, which was 11th in the league. So the Falcons last week converted 42.9%. So if that was that's around top 15 in the league if that was every week, right? So the point that he's making is if you can be that consistent week in and week out with your third downs, you're in the top half of the league, and that's a significant gain. So I do agree with him in that aspect. To your point, it was just so bad early in the season that 42% still doesn't sound great to us, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you're looking for kind of an overcorrection, it feels like.
Kirk Cousins over 500 yards, so something clearly was working well for the offensive line. Coach Raheem Morris really pleased with that. Especially when you consider the fact that Ryan Neuzel, he was in, of course, for Drew Dahlman at center, who suffered a high ankle sprain in their loss to the Chiefs. And Raheem Morris, again, happy with what he saw from the line, even with Neuzel at center.
Now, yeah, let's talk about the Viking just off the top. You know, like, you know, obviously getting back out there and playing for us and, you know, whatever percentage he is, you let him tell it. But for him to go out there and give us the effort that he gave us in the fight and the finish and to be able to go out there and get it done for us a week after hurting that leg, I think is ecstatic. It's just a credit to that group up front, their coach, that unit that's led by Lindstrom and Jake Matthews and all those guys up front. Neuzel going out there playing center fours and really Burge and those guys just being tough, physical people, knowing that Storm's going to be there as a backup for you if you need them. But, I mean, all those guys have played for this year. I can't say enough positive things about the O-line, particularly when you go out there and you pass the ball as much as we did. And for those guys to win a game and protection like they did, I am just jacked up.
And also to point out, Neuzel did start 3 games last season for Dahlman. So
yeah, I thought I think that some of what you did last year is a little bit better suited for him. I think he struggled a little bit this year so far when he's filled in, especially against the Saints. All that said, I think the offensive line's played pretty freaking well in pass protection. And for all the hate that this line received and the right tackle received, they were sacked. Kirk Cousins was sacked 4 times on Thursday night. Now, he's been sacked 10 times this season, which is like 21st of quarterbacks. And so that's bottom half of the league he's been sacked. That's pretty good. You know, you go to Deshaun Watson, he's been sacked 26 times. Geno Smith, 18. I watched some of Deshaun Watson's dropbacks yesterday, Tiff. No, that's not all the offensive line. He's seeing some ghosts. But sticking here to Atlanta, if he was sacked 4 times and he attempted 58 passes, that tells me he dropped back 62 times. And 62 times, Caleb McGarry on a bum knee held up, maybe other than once. I think he gave up 1 sack, maybe was his. That's pretty good. The offensive line in pass protection has played pretty good. They've just not, to me, been as good in run blocking, which is weird because it's a flip from what we've seen in some ways.
Well, I think that the key, at least from my perspective, has number one, you've done a couple of different things in terms of pass protection. You've had a couple of, you know, ricochet style slide protections where, you know, Caleb McGarry can slide down and kind of secure the three tech that's on Chris Lindstrom and kind of bounce back out after the chip from the tight end on the defensive end. They've done a couple of different things. And that's allowed them to be more successful. They've used 5-man pass pros and put Charlie Warner 1-on-1 a couple of times. They've put, you know, they've used a little bit of play action and allowed Bijan to step up. Bijan's also a huge part of what you're talking about for the sacks. You know, if I'm going to always take weight off the offensive line's shoulders, that it's not always the offensive line's fault, I got to hand out, you know, this a big award to Bijan Robinson and how well-rounded he's become in pass protection. So it's been good. On the flip side, to your point, not able to run the ball real well, it's kind of the opposite story. You really haven't done things very different. You haven't changed much up in the run game. You've pretty much run mid zone and wide zone and not done much else off of that. So I'll look for that to continue. We talked about it earlier. Zach Robinson's offense will continue to evolve. Kirk Cousins and his, you know, relationship with the receivers will continue to evolve. And let's see where it takes us, man. So I think it's fun to watch. until you begin to get shut down, right? And then you start asking questions. But I don't think that'll be anytime soon with what I saw last week.
Yeah, that's it. The chemistry, you know, the chemistry as it grows, Mike, what happens? Ball comes out quicker because you have a feel. You know when that you know Kirk's anticipation of when that route, how you're running that route, when you're coming out of that break. A lot of times Kirk's going to throw that ball before you come out of your break. And so if he can trust that you're running exactly and that trust is there, he's going to have no problem cutting it loose early. You know, we saw it with Matt and Julio and Matt and Roddy and Matt with Tony and, you know, not Matt with you, but.
That's not true. I'm one for one targeting me. I got no.
But did he throw it before he came out of your break?
One for one, absolutely.
Or did you just run backwards?
No, he can't. No. Came out of my break. It was right on my chest. There you go.
All right, we're gonna get some NFL headlines. Is Carolina, is their head coach still feeling some backlash from putting Bryce Young in the game after benching him last week? We'll discuss next as we get the latest from the NFL when we go in the huddle on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Well, this past weekend, we saw in the Panthers matchup against the Chicago Bears that they pulled Andy Dalton for the game, and they put in their number one overall pick, Bryce Young, who had just a few weeks ago been benched because they wanted to go with Andy Dalton. So it led to some confusion. Coach Dave Canales says that Bryce Young is the starter. How confident of a young quarterback, or excuse me, Andy Dalton is still the starter. How confident do you feel in what we'll see from the Panthers now that there's been like kind of that back and forth between QBs?
No, I mean, I think Andy Dalton's the quarterback. I think when I heard Dave Canales' audio of this when he was talking about it,
I confused myself.
He's if you notice, if you read between the lines what he said, yeah, we had a couple offensive linemen banged up. So we just wanted to put Bryce in there and see what he could do. What I heard was we had a couple offensive linemen hurt.
Oh, that's
we're losing the game. Let's we don't want to risk Andy Dalton getting hurt. We're going to put our backup quarterback, who we have no intention of playing at all the rest of this season, unless things go terribly wrong, into the game because we're ride or die for 2024 with Andy Dalton. Yeah,
you're spot on because I'm more confident than ever that Andy Dalton's their guy moving forward. You can read between the lines, like I said, and like you said. When you talk about putting a guy in because of hurt offensive linemen, that's all the evidence you need, man. How do you feel if you're Bryce Young listening to that? You're like, got my opportunity.
Well, and he's like, why would you say that?
A couple of hurt offensive linemen.
I heard people discussing this yesterday, and I was just like, how are you missing what he do you not understand?
I heard him get raked over the coals for saying it. That's what I heard.
Well, because you know why? Because we outsmart ourselves. The reason people rake him over the coals, Tiffany, is people want to hear and they want things to fit their narrative. When they benched Bryce Young, they said, this isn't temporary. This is for the rest of the year. Andy Dalton gives us the best chance to win. Now, yes, that can change in about 7 or 8 games if they're just so bad that they go, well, we suck with Andy Dalton. We might as well figure out what we have left in him and know we're not trading him. But when the coach says we had offensive linemen hurt, we're getting blown out, we're going to pull our starter.
That's what I'm saying. That's what people were roasting
but
him over.
Why? Why would he their best chance to win is with Andy Dalton.
I know, but I've never heard a coach come out and say, we put our backup quarterback in because our offensive line's dinged up and we don't want our guy to get hurt. Yeah, I guess you appreciate the transparency, but
I was going to say, it happens all the time. They just don't say it out loud.
Yeah.
Exactly. He said the quiet part out loud.
But he was asked a question. How many times do we see a team getting blown out and they stick with their starter and then people go, I don't know why he was in the game?
Yeah.
No, I mean.
And I know that's not you saying that.
I'll say this, too. I mean, say whatever you want to. The fact that he was able to go to Andy Dalton. And by the way, Andy Dalton, what is he, in year 13 now? Something like this. It's insane.
I think
the longevity of his career is crazy. But I think that the ability for him to actually pull that string as the head coach. I know there's a head coach in Cleveland that kind of wishes he probably had that power, too, to be able to pull that kind of string because that's something that not every head coach is allowed to do. I'm assuming as well that Dave Canales was given that promise when he took that job because remember us talking about it. it didn't seem like anybody wanted that Panthers job. And, you know, he took it, and I was like, man, that's kind of a crazy move. He had to have had some kind of assurance that he'd be able to make moves like that, and eventually, 2 weeks into the season, he obviously did, and I think it's for the betterment of that team.
Sometimes if you listen to coaches, they'll tell you everything. You just have to want to listen and not try to put your spin on it and just listen to the words that are coming out of their mouth.
So back to the offensive line for the Panthers and the injuries. There's actually a whole host of injuries throughout the team. But back to the O-line, center Austin Corbett, he will have season-ending surgery to repair a torn biceps suffered in that loss on Sunday to the Bears. That is what Coach Dave Canales announced. So that is rough.
Yeah, that's a rough one. He's a good player, and I know that they spent a lot of money to I was at Bradley Bozeman, I think they had there last year.
Mm-hmm.
They spent a lot of money to kind of redo the interior of that offensive line and allow, you know, Bryce Young to eventually step up in the pocket and deliver the ball to, you know, Deontay Johnson, Xavier Leggett, the guys that they signed on the back end. And yet here we are, and it seems like at least after last week you're getting a similar product. And the scary thing is for the Falcons, that product you had last year that it wasn't very good actually beat you down the stretch run. So hopefully you can find some differences as well.
Yeah, hopefully we've seen Ruka Roro get his first career action Thursday night, and I think he played really well at times. I thought he was able to shed blocks and make some plays in the run game. Hopefully the defensive line, David Onyemata, played a better game, and Grady Jarrett at times played one of his better games of the year. Hopefully those guys are able to take advantage of that.
Well, here's something else, too, because Taylor Moten, their starting right tackle, his streak of 104 consecutive starts will end on Sunday due to injury. So he will not be playing in this game as well. And I'll just run through real quick, since you brought up Xavier Leggett. Also him and linebacker Jadeveon Clowney, they both suffered shoulder injuries on Sunday. Both said they are hopeful to play against the Falcons.
Yeah, and the tight end as well.
Tommy Trimble,
who just got knocked out cold on contact. One of the worst collisions in the NFL this year, or actually probably over the last couple of years. And then I saw the Jadeveon Clowney injury as well. Obviously, that's you get what you get in Jadeveon Clowney, and you're getting those obvious passing downs. You don't want to see him absolutely be able to unleash. So, look, man, you just keep crossing your fingers that it doesn't happen to you, and you see the Saints continue to get hit hard by the injury bug, as well as Tampa, and just keep crossing your fingers and try to do all the right things. I think it's one of the things Raheem Morris does not get enough credit for is his ability to kind of manage this roster and everything else, and it's just another check in the category when you look at preseason reps. If this team continues to get better and starts flourishing down the stretch, that you're going to have to really give Raheem some credit for everything he's done in that category.
Yeah, that's always the hope, that if you suffer a bunch of injuries, you can still find guys to step up and bounce back, kind of like the Chiefs have been able to do over these years. Rashee Rice, their receiver, he is likely out for the season, despite initially getting some positive indications that he might be able to come back. He's dealing with an LCL, so that's the core ligament in your knee that needs to be repaired, so...
It's one of the more interesting dynamics in terms of knee injuries that I've read of or heard of, because you mentioned it's the LCL, and they did some testing on it, and they basically said, we won't really know how bad it is until we do surgery, until we go in and take a look at it. And that's what, because you mentioned it, it's that interior ligament when it comes to, you know, the knee. You have to go in there and kind of take a peek at it and see what all you got. And it's been funny, Tiff, not funny, but it's been interesting to kind of note the back and forth. It's like, oh, we don't think it's as bad as it is. He still might be out for the year, and we won't know until we open it up. It's like, man, I feel like it's been a roller coaster of emotions for him as far as that entire thing, but obviously a huge knock to Kansas City, even though they're still able to come out and get the win last night.
Well, if it's not as bad as they thought it was going to be, and he's still going to miss the year, then that's great news for Rashee Rice, because it means you know, if it's that bad where then it could have been more than a year. I hate it for anybody.
Yeah, it's tough, but it's always like they always find ways to win.
Well, they got X factors all over the board. They got X factor coach, quarterback, tight end, defensive line. By the way,
ding,
defensive court. They got a Hall of Fame defensive coordinator. I don't care that he was a failed head coach. He is one of the best defensive coordinators in football. And he's how many Super Bowls has that guy won as a DC?
Dial it up,
New York
Swag.
And KC. Yep.
Yeah, I agree with you.
On to some other news with the Las Vegas Raiders, who have stayed in the headlines. Now, Coach Antonio Pierce acknowledged that he's still evaluating the quarterback position after benching Gardner Minshew in favor of Aiden O'Connell against the team's loss to the Denver Broncos. So that's going on amidst the Devontae Adams situation, which he said is status quo, whatever that means. Devontae Adams, he wants a trade. So, but Antonio Pierce saying it is status quo.
It's
so
been funny to hear the Antonio Pierce news. It's come out over the last week of his time at Arizona State that he's catching flack for.
Show calls.
Yeah, dude.
8 years.
Yeah, they're like, 12 years. They took parents of recruits to a gentleman establishment, things like that. And I'm like, this guy's the head coach of the Raiders.
It fits. I mean, that's what kind of what you think the head coach of the Raiders does. I don't know. I like Antonio Pierce. I was happy he got the job. I thought he should have got the job.
We had a great, transparent meeting with him. I thought it was one of the better ones that we've had since I've been with my CBS crew.
Yeah, I still think he's the right guy, too.
Well,
he's going to put out some fires. But
I'm going to tell you that it's not been a good start as the main guy. Now, the interim was great. Being the actual dude,
they dealt
has
him
not
a bad hand,
been
dude.
A great start.
He got dealt a bad hand when they didn't go get a quarterback.
Yeah, but you can't go on Instagram and like a post of a star player.
No, you can't.
That's saying that he's probably played his last game here, and it's a report. You can't do that. Mm. You got to remember you're a leader and you're in a leadership role. As y'all tell me all the time,
he wants to be petty.
You got
to
act like a leader.
You're the leader of the show.
I'm the leader of the station this week.
This hour brought to you by Zero has smart, lasting, clean. What you got from us?
I don't know if I can even do a mic'd up listening to this guy over here. Look, we got my family and I got booed yesterday, but it's not because we're an underperforming sports team. I'll explain that and why I might be the Halloween Grinch. And also, this GHSA reclassification in high schools. I haven't heard a good reason why it's a bad thing. We'll talk about that as well. That's coming up and mic'd up on the other side of the break. It's the Morning Shift, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's a beautiful Tuesday outside. It's mic'd up. I hope you guys are doing well. Squid's over there just busy writing down stats, man. He's number crunching. He thinks of himself as kind of like a poor man's version of the Bear on College Game Day, things like that. You know what I mean? He just mixes
it up. I'm actually writing a note of something I need to do later in the show.
A term of endearment to your wife to let her know how much you love her and how beautiful she is as a pregnant woman.
It's a reminder of what I want to do in Life of Squid. I gave you a spoiler alert. Keanu Reeves.
Wait, are you teasing your segment in someone else's segment?
Yeah, coming up at 8:25.
Fair enough, man. Touche. I brought him into this. One of the first things I want to talk about, I realized over the weekend that I'm a little bit of a Halloween Grinch. And it's not a good thing. I want to get to the GHSA reclassification model that they've been talking about here coming up in just a minute. But I put this in the teaser, guys, and I said this. We got booed over the weekend, right? And it's not like a crowd booing you. Like, we had these people come up to our front porch from our neighborhood, and they leave like a bag of goodies, like Halloween goodies, and then they ring your doorbell and they run. And they leave a note that says, "You got booed."
Is
Have
it
you
on
guys
fire?
Ever seen this?
Is it on fire? And you
no, it's
it?
Not on fire. It's like a Halloween, like kitty tattoos, some like highlights.
Just get
books.
Ready for it, Bo. Maybe your community will do it when you have a little time.
I'm sure that they do this in your neighborhood. Some of them put like a sign in the front yard that says, "You got booed." I don't know if you've seen this. Or like, we use a door hanger that says, "You got booed."
So you return the favor to somebody else.
Yeah, and it kind of keeps rolling and keeps rolling.
Be careful booing me.
Yeah. Why is that?
I mean, don't come on my property unannounced.
You sound ridiculous. Here's what I'll say. I'm just not like my wife was like, "We just got booed," and I was like, "I'm just not ready for this chapter. Like, I'm not ready for this chapter of fatherhood, man. Where all of a sudden all these like things, and like I say this chapter, like these things just start building up, right?
Forced participation,
huh?
Forced participation.
Well, that and like you know. I have my godson the other day was posted to Facebook. He was asking his, he's like a 10th grader now. He was asking his girlfriend to homecoming, and he had the, "Will you go with me to HoCo?"
Oh,
sign,
you got
to
do these stupid
like
ways to do it now. It's
yeah,
so
I know.
Silly.
I was like, man, this is like, so this just kind of all falls in that category. My son's 4. I think it's cool. Like, he was excited to get all the things, but then what happens is exactly what you got to do. You got to flip around. You got to buy more toys and presents, and you got to go put them on somebody else's porch with a sign that says you got booed.
There's a thing in my neighborhood called, and I never heard of this, called Nerf Wars.
Yeah.
Now, they're kids older than yours, and they go around shooting each other. Like, it's like a whole game, and it's just like, it's, and they did it on the tennis courts one time, and they were chasing other ones or they, each other around, and the tennis folk who in our neighborhood think they're in a different they're a higher class of people, and that they have certain they basically think they have free reign over anything. They got really mad, and they started the parents. These people were scolding the parents, and the parents start chiming in, and it turned into a whole thing on a Facebook page.
There you go.
Fun fact, we had Nerf Wars in college. Very fun. Very fun.
In college?
That's on brand for you.
Did you like in a dorm, or like how was that?
We actually had access to one of the buildings. Shout out to the humanities building. We actually had access to the humanities building, and we had it throughout the entire building. It was so much fun.
Which is more proof why Kennesaw State is a better university than West Georgia.
No, it's not.
We don't allow that garbage.
Mm.
KSU, baby.
We did Airsoft Wars at one point. But, I mean, I guess I'm just a Halloween Grinch, man, because I was just like the whole boo thing. I'm like, yeah, it's not. I mean,
you're
leaning
a little bit. And it's bringing joy to your son and daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also emptying my pocketbook when you got to buy the toys and move it forward.
Why don't you just take the toys and give it to somebody else?
I guess you could do that. My kids, once they locked eyes on it, they were like, they're not letting those things go.
Go to Big Lots.
But, I mean, if it was sitting on the porch, I would have just grabbed that and walked over to the next house.
God, I thought I was a Grinch.
Wow.
Who are you?
Goodness.
Holy.
No, you guys, look. I'm just feeding into me.
I was a Grinch.
Miami, what is it?
Forced participation.
Don't worry about it. I'll be right back. Go
what
feed
is it?
Yourself.
I don't know.
Tiffany, that might have been the most curmudgeon thing you've said on this show since the history of this show.
Look, Mike told me I was cold yesterday, so I am feeding into it.
I said
you know
you're
what?
Cold.
You want me to be the villain?
I don't remember saying that, but I can see myself saying that.
You did.
Here's the thing. We got to talk a little bit about this GHSA classification. I don't know if you guys have seen this news. It kind of popped out over the weekend. I've been wanting to get to it. All right, so there is a plan from the GHSA, and it's kind of had early, you know, people signing off on it and things of that nature, to where what they're going to try to do, it seems like in the coming years, now this is like a year off from actually happening, they're going to start taking the most successful teams in each classification and moving them up, and the bottom teams in that classification and moving them down. So your 6A, 5A, 4A would no longer exist based on enrollment at these schools. You would basically say if you've dominated – you're going to have to move up. Doesn't matter
well,
how many people are at those schools.
You were originally in there based on enrollment, but because you've done so well or so poorly, you've been either promoted or relegated.
Right, and what they're going to do is it looks like initially they're going to take the last 3 years of data, so 22 and 23, 23 and 24, and 24 and 25. They'd use a point system to rank the schools and their classifications based on their finishes, and they would move them up or down. So – I guess all this kind of said, if you're a if your kid goes to a Marist or a Westminster, they're like 4A private schools. It seems that in 3 years from now, that those teams that are private schools that have low enrollment would now be in like a 6A classification and move up to the top. And I know the top classification has changed here recently, so they would move all the way up to the top eventually because of the success they have in different sports. Are you guys okay with this?
I mean, if you're pitting top teams against top teams, I don't see totally a problem with it.
Well, and I agree with you. The problem I have is and I want Day Day to pop in because he's part of Prep Sports Nation and does a huge part of our high school athletics on this station. But there are schools that basically have worked the system with not only the city. Rules that can only apply to them where they're running by city rules and they're competing with county rule schools, which that's an automatic jump, if I'm not right, Day-Day. But also, they've been moving kids around. I mean, this will kind of put the teams that want to do that together. Am I wrong about that? Or?
Yeah, absolutely.
Basically what it's going to do is, to your point, like Mike was saying, for example, Pace Academy Volleyball, they're on a run right now where they've won like 7 straight state championships, all right? And they're playing in 4A. So what that would do for them is that move them up to 9 times out of 10, probably, because now we're down to 6 classifications because of them getting rid of 7. But they'd probably be right up at 6 now, competing with more like the Waltons and teams of that nature.
Yeah.
So is that a good thing or a bad?
So it's a good thing because, I mean, the challenge GHSA has in trying to find competitive balance, like doing it based on enrollment is never going to me, in my opinion, never going to work. Because of Bo's point of schools, city schools, and even your private schools that have workarounds, right? So with this competitive balance, if you're doing well, if you're not doing well, take, for example, a new school like Second Year, right? They'll probably get bumped further down because I think they've only won a total of like 5 games in their first 3 years here.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, it's the best system to kind of get as close as you can to a competitive balance because right now it's all over the place.
I agree, and I think obviously you're going to look at the top and think about those teams moving up, and I think that a lot of those teams that are involved in that probably will have an issue with it. Maybe they won't. But I also look at teams that will be, you know, have the ability to basically get off the mat faster if you're bumped down. If you're a team that is consistently going 1-9 in football, right, and you know you're just having trouble getting guys because they're like, dude, I don't want to go to a school where I got 1-9. I'll use school choice and I'll go somewhere else. It allows you to bump down a little bit, maybe kind of recreate that program and get the thing moving in the right direction. And if you do start winning, eventually you'll kind of bump back up. So I actually like this, man. I wanted to bring it up because I obviously have been involved in high school sports in the past. I've seen this kind of on both ends, and it's a good idea. And I hope that this makes it all the way through to where a year from now we are talking about the reclassification of some of these successful programs as well as the unsuccessful ones and kind of realigning what we think of in terms of high school matchups in the sports landscape. So there you go.
You can give us your thoughts on the movement when it comes to high school sports and the competition. In our wake-up call, you can also weigh in on the Falcons and what you want to see from the team going into this week against the Panthers. Wake-up call is next. You can call us at 404-726-0929. We'll be right back here on the Morning Shift on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We are in our 8 o'clock hour. It is brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. It is time for the wake-up call here on the Morning Shift. You can call us at 404-726-0929. I know I announced a couple of topics before, which we're talking about the competitive edge in high schools with Mic'd Up. Also, Falcons and Panthers getting set for this weekend, but we announced yesterday Bo's good news. He is going to be a dad. So him and his wife Amy are expecting a little girl. Yes, applause is needed in April. And so if you have any tips, feel free to call us with your dad tips.
Yeah, I've got a couple over here, Tip. I got a couple left over from yesterday for old Squid Pappy over here. Look, man. Josh Payne says, enjoy as much sleep as you can. Can confirm that. That doesn't ever seem to come back. That is just gone for me.
So I'm going to get less sleep. Perfect.
Mr. Yo says, your wife's moods are going to swing wildly. Don't argue with her. It only makes it worse. Trust me on this.
That's what my basement's for, Mr. Yo.
A lot of truth to that. Our girl Tish said, grace is the term you need to hold close to your heart. It's your first time. Give yourself some great and support your wife as she goes through the emotional, mental, and physical changes. Blessings to you and your family, my friend. So a lot of people weighing in. If you got something, you can still hit me up on the X at MP Johnson. I'll read it on air. Make sure Bo gets all of your thoughts, man. Like we said yesterday, Shaka said, childhood is a very short season. Enjoy every moment. I'm sure that you had a massive amount of texts and phone calls over the weekend. The phone ever stopped buzzing?
There's still some rolling in, but yeah, it was very busy Saturday and Sunday. I'm glad I was off Sunday because, you know, my phone, I needed the break from it, and my phone would have been busy trying to do a Falcons game. But yeah, A lot of positive reaction, a lot of listeners. I really appreciate all y'all reaching out and giving them congratulations and everybody being happy for us. It's a fun time. It's going to be a fun time.
Was the pink cake actually tasty? Like, was it actually good? Did you actually have any of it? Because sometimes it's like when those cakes are made for events like that, they don't actually end up tasting any good.
So we use this place right there in Woodstock called Small Cakes, and I had had a cupcake from there before, and they were really good. And so this cake came, and it's kind of like me and Dylan and Day-Day were talking about this, and Dylan's like, "What kind of cake was it?" And I said, "I don't know, man. It's pink on the inside, and it's white icing." I said, "I guess it's kind of like a wedding engagement type cake, you know, kind of a neutral." So we did the whole reveal thing. We put the glasses in and pulled out, and so the cake's like all mangled. And I had a little bit Friday night, but I was so kind of numb and don't really remember much of about what happened that I didn't realize it. So Saturday night, we were at our neighbors, and I came home. I'm going to try a piece of that cake. And so I grabbed a fork, opened the boxes. Amy's like, I don't want it. The sweet's not working for me right now. And so I put a fork in, and I had a little bite, and I go, oh, that's pretty good. So I left the fork in there in case I wanted more and put it up.
But you didn't try any after you scooped it out?
No, I had to, I just don't remember. Just kind of numb to it. So I told Data, I'm an animal. Because since Saturday night when I just went back and tried it, I've just left the fork in there, and I'll go in there and just dig just a few bites out,
scoop
eat it,
by one scoop.
Close the box, put it back
in. It's a bad thing, man. Don't ever leave the fork intact. It's a bad deal.
There's a fork sitting in my cake box.
Never make the forks easily accessible.
But that's how good the cake is. Yeah. It is phenomenal cake, and I just keep going back for more. It is absolutely lovely. Phenomenal.
Let's go to the lines. We got Jamal waiting on us in Atlanta. Good morning, Jamal.
How you doing?
What's up, Jamal?
Good, you?
Doing well. Got a question for you in regards to the GHSA reclassification. I coach high school sports here in the Atlanta area. And for clarification, would they be reclassifying the entire school based on the athletic program results, or would it be individual sports? So my question is, there are some schools that are in the higher classification because of the school population, and they do really well in certain auxiliary sports, you know, maybe flag football, softball, things like that. But they're horrible in basketball and football. So would the entire school receive the same classification, or would they identify it per sport?
Thanks for the call, Jamal. And I'm glad you asked this, because we have had a number of people that have weighed in and chimed in on socials that have called in and asked the same question. And here's what I'll say. I have received from the people I know that are involved in high school sports, as you know, Day-Day and everybody else that, you know, around here, I've received two different answers. I cannot get a clear answer. I actually text Rusty Manziel a minute ago to see if he could clarify for me, because I don't know what the answer actually is to that. Here's what I'll say, though. It only makes sense if you go sport to sport. And I think what Jamal is saying that he's kind of in fear of is that, you know, one sport's really good in football, and then they don't care if they suck in basketball because they want to stay down in football. I think that's the only way that this reclassification thing actually makes sense. But as soon as I actually get a concrete answer, and hopefully maybe Rusty Manziel can call somebody and get something, you know, kind of concrete on that, I will update everybody, because I honestly do not know. And the article that's in the AJC doesn't really outline very clearly which exactly it is either. So we'll try to figure that out.
Well, a buddy, a guy I've known since I was five, I'm not going to say where he works because he's moved around, but he said, I just heard y'all talking about the competitive balance this morning on the radio. He's like, I have some input. It's complete trash. It's very unpopular from the school standpoint, and total cop-out. Now, I'm not going to say where he works and what he does, but he is involved in high school athletics. He's not a fan, and I'm asking for more input on why he doesn't like it, but there's a lot of mixed opinions on this.
All right, back to the lines we go. Will in Atlanta. Good morning, Will.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's up?
I'm not with the GHSA reclassifying. I'm not at all. It's almost like a participation trophy now. To be trying to make it like this. Like, for me, growing up in Atlanta, like, we played a hard region, but we might have had, like, schools like North Atlanta that wasn't good in sports. But even though they wasn't good in sports, it gave a couple of kids that went to a sorry school, it gave them a chance to showcase their talent and get recruited playing against a good team that they might not have got recruited playing against a weaker team. So I think you kind of want to be careful when you talk about reclassifying, because it might not get a kid, especially with the transfer portal now, it might not get those weaker schools that got two or three dogs on their team, might not get them a chance to get that recruited because they won't be playing against the top competition. That's kind of like a slippery slope, what you're doing.
Yeah, and I tend to agree with kind of what your initial sentiment is. The only thing I'll kick back on, Will, is that these schools already are not playing under the same rules. Like, if these were all the same rules and you were kind of playing that way, but when you have city schools meet county schools, meet private schools, and they're all going about it a different way, and then to your point, you talked about the transfer portal. You have school choice all over Atlanta right now, and these kids are kind of allowed to go wherever they want to go. For the most part. And so I'm with you. I don't want the participation trophy either, but I also would love just a balanced league. We talk about it. I say it all the time. The NFL is the most popular league in the world because of the fact that it's completely fair. The salary cap is fair for everybody. The draft is fair for everybody. There's no luxury tax or anything like that. So I don't know, man. I'm with you, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring it up on today's show. I don't really know how I feel, and I'm getting some texts now about kind of the point system it looks like they might use to reclassify based on each sport at an individual school. Man, it just – you start getting down in the weeds of this thing. There's a lot of small, subcategories when it comes to some of this stuff. So we'll keep our eyes peeled on it. I'm with you off the top, though. I don't want the participation trophy. I just want everybody to be under similar rules. That's all.
Let's get in our last caller. We got Jasper waiting on us. Good morning, Jasper.
On that piece, and then I like that.
Oh, Matthew from
Jasper.
Great
idea.
All right.
What's up, Matthew?
Good morning, everyone.
What's up, man?
I've got some experience with this, and this may have been said earlier, and I missed it, but this has been done in soccer for the better part of 20 years. I think it's, you know, change is always hard for people to accept, but it has worked very well. I think soccer uses it basically as strength of schedule, if you want to look at it that way. Also, I think soccer originally adopted because players, even at the very adolescent level, leave and go from team to team, and the teams can change dramatically within one season, within two seasons. So I know change is difficult, but it really does breed strength and allow teams to recalibrate and then get better. Please don't hang up because I'm not in my truck.
You're all right, man.
All right, well, Dylan can put you on hold so you can listen to our response. So I'm talking to some people now that work at some smaller schools, and the fear for them is that this will punish a small school because if you what they think is that sustained success in small schools is tougher, and it's cyclical. So they might have a run that could push them up a class or two. And then when it kind of comes back down to size for them and they lose some of those players, now it might take them years to get back down to where they were. So they'll essentially be punished in that aspect, if that makes sense, because they're dealing with when you're a smaller school, it's harder to get that talent in there. So I see both sides of it from what I'm being told and hearing. I think we need to figure out if the playing by the same rules, and I think that the city schools have been able to cheat the system in some ways, not cheat literally, but play by different rules because of what they are in the city, and it's given them an unfair advantage with some of the counties. That's what I think, and I think maybe you need to look at that aspect before you punish these smaller schools and pop them up and they have to compete for years with, bigger populations.
This hour brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Go to markspain.com to get a guaranteed offer on your home today and start packing. We have a Life of Squid up next.
I do. I'm going to talk about why
that was creepy.
Keanu Reeves is the man. And our friends
Keanu in Atlanta. Oh, Reeves. Yeah, okay.
And Atlanta Motor Speedway.
Atlanta, baby.
They're doing the right thing. I can't wait to talk about what our boy Brandon Hutchinson is doing. All next on the Morning Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and
the Odyssey app.
We are back here on the Morning Shift, and we were getting a lot of calls on the wake-up call stemming off of Mic'd Up about some changes coming to high school sports.
Yeah, Tiff, and a little bit of clarity from what I was just sent. And this clarity, I use quote fingers above my head because it's still kind of fuzzy. But it basically says all schools would move class. I mean, all sports at a school would move classes, but you'd get more points and more weight because of certain participation in certain sports. So, like, if 94.9% of schools play basketball, and the state champion that year would get 94.9 points. If 17.6 have gymnastics, the state champ that year in gymnastics would get 17.6 points. So it gets a little bit fuzzy, man, as you start to move down that. I know I've had a ton of interaction on my phone with people that are for and against it. But here's what I do know. The model right now, in my opinion, is broken.
Oh, absolutely.
And so hopefully something is done. I don't want it to not happen, and people are just like, well, it shouldn't happen. Something has to move and budge, because there's a lack of fairness, it feels like.
But this can't be something where everyone has to have input. Small schools, you know, the small public schools, the larger public schools, private schools, city schools, they all have to have some kind of input. But I feel like it's a system that has allowed private and city schools to play by their own set of rules. The county schools have just not been able, they've just been in a different play. They've been in the same playing field, but they haven't. You know, they compete against each other, but the rules are completely different. And it's just not been fair. It's almost like if half of the NCAA could pay their players and use NIL, and the other half was still under the old rule system where they couldn't. That's not, and I'm not saying that anybody players getting paid. I'm just talking about how they can openly recruit, how they can move players in.
Yeah.
The academic part, like, not trying to throw any people out there, but Lassiter has a different way of the way they do things than the way Cartersville or Buford does them. And it's just how it is. And that's the reality of the situation.
Can't confirm.
So you're talking about smaller schools versus the larger schools and what they were able to.
Well, and just schools that have the academic, the way they do academically and who they will allow to come into their school, where there's, you know, city schools can just openly recruit anyone and there's no ramifications.
I used to be a proponent, back when I was a lot more heavily involved in this, a proponent of allowing these schools to play one another, but having separate champions. Like, there should be a city school champion. Like, you could play, like, if Gainesville wanted to play Gwinnett County School or Buford wanted to play Gwinnett County School, that's fine. But then you get into state playoffs, then you would have Rome versus Buford versus Gainesville versus Marietta versus whoever else is the city school. That always made more sense to me. But, again, I'm not as locked in as a lot of our listening audience is, and I'm sure there will be differing opinions on that. So,
yeah, I was texting my buddy who's in a smaller area, and he's like, look, this could hamper small schools for years with things. Because remember, if all sports are going in this one little formula, you might be good at football for 4 years and be affected for the next 12 because you bumped you all the way up. And then you have soccer that's doing well all of a sudden, and they're keeping you up there. So I understand. I think there's got to be, though, a happy medium. Maybe we bring in the mediator from outside. Maybe bring someone
maybe
in.
Maybe some arbitration.
Yeah, just no one that ever worked for the NCAA.
Okay.
Then it will just not get right.
Oh, hey, I got an idea. Let's bring in a politician. There.
Yeah, because they always make things better. But you know who does make things better? Me. That's right. WSauce, Fireshire. What is it? The Bloody Mary mix. Key West style. And my friends at New Realm. I met with them the other day. We didn't get a chance to talk about it yesterday. I met with my guy Chaz from New Realm, the Al Inn.
What are you cooking up?
Oh, I'm cooking up but the KSU beer is a thing, and it is tremendous. Met with them over at Twin Peaks on Friday at the Dukes and Bell broadcast. Had a good old time, and threw back a few cold beers.
I like when you do sponsors on the end of this segment, because you have to get through them a lot quicker before we get to break.
And don't forget, the Brown Grass Charity Golf Classic is November 25th. You can go to the 929 The Game website, go to the events page, and you will find all the information. But I'm going to tell you, there was quite a little bit of movement over the weekend with people signing up. Slots are going fast. Do not be texting me in the beginning of November saying, hey, can I still play? Well, does it say you can play? No, it says that you're sold out. Well, then, you know, that's kind of like a concert. It can't get you in if all the tickets are gone. But we'll see what we can do. Just get over there, get signed up, and you can see Mike shank a ball into the pond on 14.
Look,
all right.
This segment is just sponsorships and events. Well, good event. It's a good event you're talking about.
Hey,
but
I'm a charitable guy who has plenty of endorsers who want to be a part of the Squid Nation, Tiff. So I appreciate you setting me up there. All right, let's get to it. Atlanta Motor Speedway. Friend of the show.
Correct.
Brandon Hutchinson.
Oh, I thought you were telling me what you were going to do during the break. And
oh,
I was
no,
like,
I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to that next.
All right, continue.
Friend of the show, Brandon Hutchinson and Atlanta Motor Speedway have opened the Speedway up, the campgrounds, anyways, for Hurricane Milton evacuees. So if you come up, you can come up there.
That's awesome.
That is basic. From what I'm reading, you go up there and you can. It's basically just come camp. Now they are charging $35 a night for the spaces that have the power and the water hookups and stuff. But obviously, a lot of people just want to come. They'll buy their own supplies. They'll figure those things out. It's more about being safe and having somewhere to be safe. So really, really, really thank Brandon Hutchinson for opening that up. And he says that his quote was, "We have hundreds of acres of campgrounds, and opening up our facility is an easy choice to make. If you're in Milton's path and looking for a place to stay, they're there for you."
They have a history. Brandon has a history of this. If you remember, Atlanta Motor Speedway, literally the haulers were pulling in for the NASCAR race when COVID hit, when the day the shutdowns hit, all the drivers were arriving and people were telling them to go back home, that they were not going to race that weekend. And he basically allowed people to kind of stay there and say, look, make sure we're, separating, make sure we're not near each other, but we're not going to kick anybody out of here in terms of this. And you can stay here with your RV. I remember that as well. So hats off to them, man. I know there's a lot of people fleeing South Florida right now, as they should. Hopefully everybody is able to stay safe.
All right. And probably one of my favorite actors in Hollywood. I mean, the most famous line to me is, "Bodhi, people trusted you and they died." Keanu Reeves, John Wick.
That was really good.
Thank you.
First Nation.
I'm a big fan. I've done it quite a bit. Keanu Reeves went and raced in a Toyota GR Cup race in Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which is an amateur-focused racing series for car enthusiasts and aspiring racers. He finished 25th on Saturday and 24th on Sunday of 33. Now, I know you might be like, "Oh, yeah, he sucks." Well, that's pretty damn good for your first races in this kind of event. He did spin out, though, at one point. Mike, I saw him coming around the turn, and the back end.
Getting the gas a little too quick.
A racing turn would be the back end stepped out from underneath you.
Almost backed it in.
And it did step out from underneath him, and he kind of caught it, went through the grass, did not hit the wall, saved it. Phenomenal job. My friends at TMZ messaged me and said, "Hey, do you want to come on and talk today about Keanu Reeves?" And I said, "Hell to the yes. I want to talk about Keanu Reeves."
How did you become the go-to guy for this topic? How were they like, "Man, you know what? Let's hit that Squidbilly guy up."
Well, I'm the go-to guy for Aaron Rodgers information, too. But anyways, like, I talked about
how?
It. There is nothing, me and Tiff were talking about in the break, there's nothing Keanu Reeves can't do. The guy is in a band. He is a racer. He's a part of the ownership group of a custom motorcycle company that builds custom motorcycles. Keanu Reeves is all of us if we won the lottery. He's like, "I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do that." And he's a hell of a human being. For many think he's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet on the face of the earth. So, you know the Bud Light commercial used to do would say, this beer is for you? Keanu Reeves, this new realm, Al In, is for you, sir. Man of the day.
Man of the day.
All right.
He is my favorite too. Everyone loves Keanu Reeves. All right, when we come back here on the morning shift, we've got Ross Dellinger, who covers college football for Yahoo Sports. There's a lot to get to, especially after the shakeups that went down this past weekend in college football. Stay with us. We'll be right back on the morning shift on Sports Radio 99 The Game. I should be asking how all of college football fans are right now, especially after the massive shakeups that went down over the weekend. What was the biggest, I mean, I would say Alabama, but I don't know. What was the biggest surprise to you?
Yeah, I would say it would probably be that one. Yeah, Vanderbilt beating Alabama, pretty significant and historic victory for them. I think it had been since 1984 that they had beaten Alabama. I think they scored the most points on Alabama since 1906, and these teams play not every year, but probably every two or three years. So it's it was pretty incredible and to see that happen and the goalposts get carried out. But certainly there were a lot of upsets. You know, maybe the most upsets, I think, since we on one weekend, I think, since 2007. And right now the season in a lot of ways shaping up to be a 2007 season, which kind of was pretty wild and chaotic and gave us a two-loss champion.
Yeah, Ross, I'm glad you brought up the 2007 season. I was about to ask you about that in particular. Like, it's 16 years ago, and everybody still kind of references the 2000 season, the parity that was, how some of the bigger teams went down, and obviously resulting in LSU being a two-loss champion, like you said. When we get 16 years from now, will what we saw Saturday become more of a norm because of the rules and regulations around college football? Or do you think that this you know, this past weekend and this season will continue to stand above the above the rest as college football kind of you know, weighs some of the things going on right now?
Well, I think you know, we've seen so much change in college athletics over the last, especially the last 3 to 4 years. You know, I hesitate to even imagine what things are will be like in 16 months, let alone 16 years. It's changing so rapidly. I would imagine, you know, by that time we'll have probably more of a professional type of system in college athletics where there's direct pay to athletes, and that will almost certainly end in a further separation of those at the that have the high resources in college athletics and those at the lower end. We've seen a gap between those two segments of FBS. But, you know, the upsets, if you look at the upsets over the weekend, you can really point to one thing, and that is the immediate ability for players to transfer and immediately play, immediately be eligible with the transfer rule in the portal, the transfer portal. And Diego Pavia of Vanderbilt, the quarterback, I think, is a good example of that. You know, he left New Mexico State and joined Vanderbilt over the offseason. And without him, they don't win that game. And I think there's a lot of cases like that where you have a player who's come in from either the lower ranks to a higher school or sometimes from the higher ranks to a lower school for playing time, and you see them succeeding and leading a team. And oftentimes it is quarterbacks. I think I crunched the numbers right before the season, in fact, in a power conference schools, and about half or maybe 55% of day one starters at power conference schools were transfer quarterbacks. So we're seeing that have more of an effect than anything, and I'm guessing that is not going to change very much. You'll continue to have players move around probably at a pretty high rate.
Ross, a couple weeks ago, about I guess a month ago, when Notre Dame loses at home, I tell you that they're completely out of the college football playoff. But now, as Texas A&M is getting stronger and had a phenomenal win, and Notre Dame has stayed up in the voters process, and, you know, I know it's just the coaches and the AP, and it doesn't count in the playoff, but now I'm starting to wonder if Notre Dame could find themselves sneaking back in with the way Tennessee lost, Ole Miss has lost. And so is there any chance in the world that Notre Dame is a part of the college football playoff at the end of the year with one terrible loss at home?
Well, in the expanded playoff version, yeah, absolutely. You know, probably in the 4-team version, you know, you wouldn't think so, right? Notre Dame would probably be out with that kind of loss. But in the expanded playoff, absolutely. Notre Dame and I think any other team that hasn't lost more than two games is still in a lot of ways alive. Especially if they haven't lost more than one game, like Notre Dame, they're very much alive. So we're going to see, you know, the expanded playoff has five automatic qualifiers for conference champions and seven at large. So you're going to take the top 11 teams will get in roughly, will get into the playoff. And you look at the 10th and 11th best team over the last several years, and most of them have had two losses. Sometimes they've had three.
All right, Ross. Thank you so much. We appreciate the time this morning.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, that was Ross Dellinger, college football writer for Yahoo Sports. You can follow him on X at Ross Dellinger.
Yeah, interesting stuff as we kind of break ground on a number of these college football topics that we're just not used to talking about. And I think it's a good point, Bo, you bring up about Notre Dame being able to get back into it and what exactly disqualifies you from the playoff this day and age. I don't know.
Well, I thought
I honestly don't know.
I thought Ole Miss had kind of hurt themselves. A&M, I thought, was completely out after the start of the season. Now A&M's sitting at 5-1, and I'm like, okay, well, as long as Notre Dame keeps winning, their loss isn't terrible, and they're going to have good wins. It just – everything is kind of thrown in turmoil. And I want to put one little bow, and I'm tweeting with Eric about the high school stuff. And Eric, you know, brought up, he goes, hey, you know, the city schools all don't cheat to do things that don't have a advantage. You know, the Atlanta city schools aren't doing the same things that Milton and Carrollton and Cartersville and Buford are doing. And he basically uses the word cheating. I want to put something clear. Those teams aren't cheating. They're playing by the rules that they have outlined. The problem is they live by different rules than county schools. Any city school can pretty much do what they want like that. As long as it's not outside of the rules that they're confined by, they can do whatever they want. It's not cheating.